What if everything you've ever done, every achievement, relationship, creative work, even the personality you've carefully crafted, was secretly designed to help you forget one unbearable truth? Not that you'll die someday, but that you know you'll die, and this knowledge haunts you every moment you're alive. This is the radical claim at the heart of Ernest Becker's work. We are the only creatures cursed with awareness of our own mortality, and this knowledge creates such unbearable anxiety that all human civilization is essentially an elaborate defense mechanism against it. We're not just afraid of death. We've built entire cultures, religions, careers, and identities to avoid thinking about it. Consider how we intellectually acknowledge death while emotionally denying it. We attend funerals, write wills, yet live as if immortal. This isn't hypocrisy, but necessary self-deception, a psychological sleight of hand that allows us to function despite knowing our bodies are slowly decaying toward oblivion. Humans exist in an impossible contradiction. We possess godlike consciousness. We can contemplate infinity, imagine distant galaxies, project ourselves across time, yet we're trapped in decaying animal bodies, destined to fail. Becker calls this being gods with anuses, capturing our profound discomfort. Unlike animals responding to immediate stimuli, we're burdened with symbolic self-awareness that makes us foreign to ourselves. A dog doesn't wonder if its life has meaning. We do, constantly. Researchers call this the worm at the core. When scientists measure galvanic skin responses during death discussions, they find universal anxiety beneath even calm exteriors. Children reveal this terror through nightmares, magical thinking, and confusion about cause and effect. As they develop, they don't overcome this fear. They simply repress it more effectively. What appears as adult acceptance is actually repression working overtime, a psychological achievement rather than genuine peace. We manage death awareness through heroism, our universal need to feel we matter in an indifferent cosmos. Every society functions as a hero system, providing roles that allow people to earn cosmic significance. From religious martyrs to coal miners, each culture creates vehicles for heroic performance. This isn't vanity, but fundamental psychological need. Children reveal this most desperately. Sibling rivalry isn't selfishness, but a fight to justify themselves as objects of primary value. As we grow, we develop character, what Becker calls our vital lie, a face that hides inner defeat. These traits are essentially secret psychoses, masks we use to bluff ourselves about our condition. The child's fundamental project is to become causa sui, cause of oneself, essentially to become God. This narcissistic project begins when infants feel omnipotent, controlling their world through the mother, continues as self-control becomes the means of possessing reality, and culminates in the traumatic realization that the body cannot serve as a fortress against death. Unlike animals protected by instincts, humans are impossible creatures with no natural defense against full perception. We contemplate existence and imagine infinite possibilities, yet this extraordinary consciousness creates an appalling burden. Freud's greatest discovery was that psychological illness stems from fear of self-knowledge, of our emotions, impulses, and potentialities. This fear protects our self-esteem from knowledge that might make us feel worthless. Animals receive this protection automatically. Humans must painstakingly earn it. The average person fashions character precisely to put it between themselves and life's terrifying facts, creating a personality structure that filters overwhelming reality. We uniquely aspire to be godlike while equipped only with animal capabilities. The deepest irony? We need freedom from death anxiety to function, yet life itself constantly awakens it, forcing us to shrink from being fully alive. Without traditional religious frameworks, we still crave heroic significance, but lack the divine dimension to fulfill it. The romantic solution attempts to fix our cosmic heroism onto another person. The love partner becomes the divine ideal, creating a cosmology of two. Popular love songs reveal this deification. The lover becomes divine, like heaven, the answer to all existential questions. Yet this solution fails because no human can bear the burden of godhood. We want redemption, validation, and perfection from our lovers, but they are finite, fallible beings who get sick, age, and die. This impossible demand leads to resentment and despair, not because love is false, but because we've asked it to save us from death. The creative solution represents the artist's attempt to fashion personal meaning through work that becomes both expression and justification, a private religion offering immortality through unique gifts. Yet the more one develops as a distinctive being, the more guilt one feels, knowing their work is ephemeral and potentially meaningless unless justified from outside themselves. Mental illness represents distinct styles of becoming trapped in the denial of our fundamental creatureliness, the ultimate failure of heroism. Depression develops when individuals become deeply afraid of life itself, retreating through systematic self-restriction until they become essentially helpless. Their fear of life paradoxically leads to excessive fear of death, culminating in complete immobility, becoming as though dead to avoid both life's demands and death's reality. Schizophrenia represents perhaps the ultimate burden of human consciousness, manifesting in those who see reality without protective cultural filters, becoming overwhelmed by existence's fundamental fragility. As William James noted, the realist reaction to life's genuine horrors is, ironically, the psychotic one. All mental illness ultimately represents failed heroics, private religions attempting, unsuccessfully, to solve the fundamental problem of existence. The real tragedy emerges after years of incredible suffering. It takes 60 years to make such an individual, and then he is good only for dying. Psychotherapy offers significant gifts, affirming oneself, smashing constricting idols, but cannot deliver constant joy and freedom. Freud honestly admitted he merely cured the miseries of the neurotic, only to open him up to the normal misery of life. The ideal human condition is openness toward mystery, living in the lived truth of creation, by seeing the world with minimal repression and acknowledging our smallness before the universe's majesty. This means accepting that creation is grotesque, organisms tearing each other apart with routine slaughter in earthquakes and accidents. For 3 billion years, our planet has been turned into a vast pit of fertilizer, though the sun distracts us, baking blood dry and offering hope through warmth. True achievement must come from within, the subjective energies of creatures, without deadening, with the full exercise of passion, vision, pain, fear, and sorrow. Life mysteriously pushes toward expansion, and this urge to cosmic heroism is sacred and not to be neatly rationalized. What remains after stripping away illusions? We are small, mortal creatures in an incomprehensible universe. Yet this recognition isn't cause for despair, but for a different kind of courage. The courage to live fully despite knowing the odds, to create meaning in the face of meaninglessness, to love knowing loss is inevitable. The most any individual can do is fashion something and offer it to the life force, finding not immortality, but meaning in our brief, terrifying, and wondrous existence.